8:30 p.m. at Tabor Space, 5441 Southeast Belmont Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This is KBOO Portland. Coming up this morning on KBOO at 8, in fact, next, Abe and Joe talk about the fact that one of the marks of an autocrat is a refusal to be accountable for their action. At 9 on Alternative Radio, award-winning playwright and noted stage and screen actor Wallace Shawn talks about artists and social responsibility. At 10, it's Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. Dennis gives an update on Mumia Abu-Jamal. Also, our latest episode of the Election Crimes Bulletin with Greg Palast. At 11 on Stage and Studio, host D.M.A. Roberts talks with two directors opening plays soon. We'll hear from Rebecca Martinez, who's directing Wolf at the Door at the Milagro Theater, and Lava Alapai, director of The Revolutionists at Artist Repertory Theater. At 11:30 on Art Focus, host Joseph Gallivan interviews Grace Cook Anderson, curator of Northwest Art at the Portland Art Museum, about The Map Is Not the Territory. All of these KBOO programs are made possible by member support. If you'd like to become a member, go to kboo.fm or use our mobile app and click on Donate.
Hey! Good morning.
Good morning.
All right, it's your job to cheer me up.
That was the extent of my positivity this morning. Good morning.
Good morning. Sure. Okay, I'll buy that. Hey, this is this is KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial here in Portland, Oregon. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. Abe Proctor sitting over there. Me, Joe Uris. The number to call, 231-8187.
Thank you to everybody who called up and made a contribution during our spring membership drive.
Yeah, and I have to say, we're tomorrow we're going to host a couple of people who gave us a bunch of money.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Dinner with Abe and Joe.
Dinner with Abe and Joe. What a treat.
Yeah. To some, a sparkling evening of conversation. To other, the very embodiment of torture.
Anyway, these people were very kind to give a $200 contribution. We're going to go eat at the Screen Door, which is a really quite nice restaurant.
Indeed.
Yeah. Praise to the Screen Door, which opened up for us and is paying for our food.
Yeah, it's very, very generous. Thank you so much.
It's going to include the wine and stuff like that.
Oh, my.
Yeah, we can get stone schnockered on alcohol like in the old
tradition.
It's going
to get crazy.
We can fall or down and people will carry us out.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to have us back after that.
Yeah, really. They'll be so glad to see us.
Okay, well, let me set the table.
Please.
So, see how I followed on that metaphor there?
Nicely.
Okay. See what I did there? Yeah,
very, very, hey, very
you.
Elegant.
Thank you.
Kind of like Milton Berle.
Exactly like
who they? Who nobody who listens to the show, well, a lot of them are older, know who he is, was.
Well, this morning show is an example of how Joe and I will sometimes sort of do a course correction on the fly and change our topic a little bit. This morning it happened.
Wait, are we changing our topic?
Well, no, we're just going to sort of mix in a different topic. Originally, we're going to talk about, and we're still going to talk about, really the unprecedented level to which the Trump administration is stonewalling other branches of government who are trying to get their hands on sensitive information. There's always a push and pull between the executive branch and the legislative branch, for example.
Well, that was sort of designed in the system.
It was, yeah. You know, the system of checks and balances the great white man country. Yeah. So there's always a little push and pull. Hey, you give us these legal briefs. Not unless our lawyer says, okay, you come testify. Not unless we get a list of questions first. That kind of stuff.
Yeah, and no questioning by lawyers.
Right.
Although,
yeah, well, this time around, the Trump administration is not just engaging in that typical back and forth regarding the disclosure of information or the appearance of witnesses. It is flat out refusing.
Right.
In a way that is really, for lack of a better term, unconstitutional.
Well, it is unconstitutional, but can they get away with it?
Well, the question of can they get away? Well, maybe that is the question. They are getting away with it.
Yeah.
So far, there's been nothing done to remedy the situation.
Well, it's a little early to say.
So far, they're getting away with it, Joe.
Right, so far.
There have been a number of subpoena requests that have been flatly denied. And independent of Trump himself, his puppet attorney general, William Barr.
What a piece of work.
It has quite clearly made clear his interest to immunize the Justice Department from any oversight from Congress. So that was our initial topic today.
Yeah, that was what we planned to do.
Yeah, and it's sort of a piece with the other thing we want to talk about, which is the normalization of hate speech, the numbness, and also the normalization of acts of hateful violence in our culture, the permissiveness that has been allowed to fester under the administration of Donald Trump.
And the normalization of lies. I mean, we got a president who's passed 10,000 lies in public.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
Yeah, the guy lies all the time.
Now, I'm a good liar, but I never could achieve that.
Yeah. Just over the weekend, the president lied. Really repeated a pretty vile piece of slander against the medical industry when he described the process by which physicians and new mothers conspire to murder their newly born infants.
Right.
It was truly, truly ugly.
Creepy.
Yep. And of course, his audience ate it up.
Well, you know, I have to say Hillary shouldn't have said it, but these are really, really
deplorables.
Deplorable people.
He talked about the conspiracy for infanticide that happens between physicians and new mothers. He talked about it in really strange terms. He talked about how they take the baby and they wash it and they
swaddle it.
Swaddle it beautifully, he said, and then they kill it.
Yeah.
So the next time that somebody shoots up an abortion clinic, and it'll be a white Christian dude who does it, no one will be able to point at any one utterance of the president. No one will be able to point at any single tweet that led to that act of violence. But of course, it happens against the backdrop and in the context of this permissiveness that we're talking about.
This
is called stochastic terrorism. Have you heard this term before?
No.
Stochastic terrorism. Acts of violence that occur amid the backdrop of a politically and socially permissive environment. Ah. Nothing that you can connect the dots to, not a strict quid pro quo sort of relationship, but violence that is allowed to bloom amidst the right sort of fertile conditions.
There's another thing involved, is a psychiatric problem of Trump's. His mind runs weird, truly weird. I mean, I'm not talking about fantasies of foreign invasions or space nuts or whatever. I mean strange paths. So that he will say things that you could never in your wildest dreams imagine even thinking, let alone saying out loud. And he does this repeatedly. So he is what we would have to call a pathological liar. He can't tell the truth to save his, well, whatever.
His whatever, yes.
Yes.
And here's what is perhaps a casualty of the unique American socio-political system, right? We have this system wherein, in order to win national office, to win the presidency, you've got to win a majority of electoral votes. We've been over and over and over this on this program, right?
Right.
This means that certain political views can be compartmentalized, appealed to, harvested, as you will, if you will, by a would-be demagogue like President Trump, meaning that all he has to do is say the right things to the right people. They constitute enough of a critical mass of his electoral base that he is guaranteed electoral victory. This is what happened in the last primary 2016. This is what happened in the general election in 2016. And in these conditions, lies matter. The things that he says matter. This violence that is happening is not happening in a vacuum. There's been an ugly strain of anti-Semitism that has run not just through American culture, but Western culture for literally centuries. And when the guy at the top creates an environment in which anti-Semites feel, I'm not going to face any reprisal for saying what I want to say. Maybe I won't face much of a reprisal if I go into a synagogue and shoot up a bunch of worshipers.
Yes.
Stochastic terrorism,
ah,
Joe.
Okay. Stochastic terrorism. It is a new term for me.
Yeah. And you know, lest you think for a moment that I'm indulging in hyperbole here. This
well, you use a lot of big words today.
I do use a lot of big words.
That's impressive.
That's because, you know, our language contains them, and they're very handy to use.
Don't let me make you defensive, man.
Oh, I would never do such thing.
Okay.
Twitter. You've heard of Twitter.
I have heard of it.
It is a social media platform.
Yes, I don't indulge in it because it's too creepy.
It's a social media platform in which people can exchange brief brief messages that are usually not very well thought out.
Right.
The president, like, it is his primary mode of communication. Now, for a long time on Twitter, there's been a question amongst users. And it basically revolves around this, that Twitter has seen fit to ban a whole bunch of things from its platform. It doesn't like nudity. It doesn't like...
I like nudity.
It doesn't like certain kinds of hate speech.
I don't like hate speech.
There's been a call amongst users for a long time, say Twitter, ban the white supremacists who are using your platform. Ban the neo-Nazis who are using your platform. And Twitter has steadfastly refused for a variety of reasons, one of which may have to do with the fact that the white supremacist in chief is a primary user of their platform. But just recently, this report came out over the weekend on a number of platforms, that Twitter, the engineers at Twitter have written an algorithm that would allow Twitter to more effectively crack down on neo-Nazi and white supremacist content. So this is an algorithm that moves through the universe of tweets, and it looks for certain combinations of words, certain phrases, certain imagery and symbolism, and it says, okay, this is white supremacist, mm-hmm. and it flags that activity and then brings it to the attention of a moderator, who can then go take a closer look and decide whether or not to ban this user, right? They're not running this algorithm. Do you want to know why?
Why?
Because the algorithm can't tell the difference between neo-Nazis and Republicans.
Well, there's maybe not that much difference.
That's what I'm saying. This is what I mean when a small piece of the Republican electorate has, for all intents and purposes, taken over the party. Trumpism is now Republicanism, is now white supremacy, and Twitter's algorithm can't tell the difference.
Well, at the same time, you have the New York Times, in its international edition, inexplicably running an anti-Semitic cartoon.
Yeah, that's a head-scratcher, too.
Yeah. Well, how? Why? What?
Yeah. Yeah. And so we had this this synagogue shooting that happened last week in Southern California, and the reaction was largely, this is becoming normalized, Joe. This happens so often that when it happens again, we kind of look at the death toll, only one person dead,
Or the killing, for that matter, of school children.
The killing of school children.
I mean, I think it's beyond the question of anti-Semitism, which is folded into it.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually a proclivity toward violent, insane activity.
Violent, insane activity and incendiary language.
Yeah.
Consider what else is happening amidst this broad context of permissiveness. We have families, children being separated from their families at our southern border.
Right.
We have this incredible campaign of linguistic demonization of immigrants from Central and South America.
That
unbelievable
is
stuff.
So
they're
weird.
Diseased. They're criminals. They're rapists. They're sending all their worst people. These people are leeches who just suck up tax dollars. Interestingly, another report came out last week that I fell into it myself. Undocumented people pay something on the order of $5 billion a year in Social Security taxes without any hope of ever seeing any benefit from that. But yet, the slander continues that undocumented people are a drain on our economy.
Yeah, and reminiscent of the period of time when the Nazis were in charge in Germany and the war hadn't yet started, people are being told they can't come to this country because there's no room.
There's no room here.
No room
Go
at
away.
The inn. Is
there's
that not,
no
that,
room at the inn?
Yeah,
yes.
That's a little bit reminiscent of something.
Indeed, it is. So all of this combines to create this context in which behavior that had been rightfully banished from the public sphere. And I'm not talking in terms of official censorship or violating anyone's First Amendment rights. That we collectively as a society has decided that no. These things are not going to be part of legitimate public discourse.
Right.
They are, once again, part of public discourse.
It's so sickening. And the President of the United States, who, to my mind, is intellectually probably right around the age of 11, 12, 10.
Yeah, it's
some
really
kind of low level of something. With a grown-up or perhaps even an old withered body. I mean, I don't care
to speculate.
Okay, don't. I don't want to see it.
Nor do I care to envision.
I don't want to think about it.
Although that awesome statue that was put up in New York, I don't know if you ever saw that.
What?
Google Trump naked statue when you get a moment.
Oh, okay.
It's pretty funny.
I guess I can handle it.
But we want to talk more about this and about what this means, this permissive context. We also want to talk more about what it means that Trump is essentially refusing to hand over any potentially compromising material to anybody who might have any oversight over him. That's one of the marks of a would-be dictator.
Right. And what he's doing is stalling. He's trying to stall through the electoral campaign.
Yes, indeed.
And with the idea that his vote will be high. And the Democrats, the problem they face is, should they go with a candidacy that is relatively conservative, or should they go with ideas that are new and vibrant and possible and might lead to a social democracy?
Precisely. Let me throw a little bit more into to make this case for the context I'm talking about. A black church in Louisiana was burned to the ground last month, met with a collective,
Actually, two.
Two. This is on top of a rash of similar burnings that have happened across the old Confederacy, going back more than a year now.
Yeah.
Even going back to the Obama administration, there was a similar outbreak.
Well, you know,
he was
born in Kenya.
He was born in Kenya, yes. Yeah. So we have essentially the targets of this culture of hate, and I think that's an apt term for this, Jews, African Americans, people of Latino descent, liberals, and quite possibly, as you just mentioned, people who advocate democratic socialism.
Or women.
Women!
How
thank
dare
you.
They withhold no, their thanks. Affection?
How dare I
how
overlook
dare they.
That?
Yes, really.
Indeed, yeah. One of the primary targets of patriarchy,
wait, I left,
women.
I left something out. Homosexuals.
Oh, right, of course.
Yeah.
Of course. Let's go to the phones. Ed, you're first.
Ed, good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, every time Trump lies, everybody has all these euphemisms about his lying. They call it, well, he's not telling the truth, or, well, he could be a little more honest and all this stuff. But when the Russians lie, we call it propaganda. So I think we should just call Trump's lies propaganda.
Okay. I don't know if that necessarily gives us...
I'm not sure it matters. I mean,
I think it's better to call them lies.
I like lies. But okay.
Thank you.
Yep, thanks for the call. Yeah,
well,
this is the world in which we live.
The level of discourse that has overtaken our popular political culture is so outrageous, particularly on the right. It's just horrendous. And in meanwhile, onrushing realities, climate change, which they deny, and then they say, well, you can't do anything about it, blah blah blah, that sort of thing. Plus all the things that we're doing, the way we're manipulating the disastrous situation in Venezuela, for example, the way in which we are allowing the resurgence of Islamic terrorism, for example, and in the process pointing to those acts and saying that all followers of Islam are somehow part of that.
Indeed. And the flip side of that coin is that when we're confronted with act after act of terrorism committed by white Christian dudes, there's no similar nomenclature. We don't talk about Christian terrorism in this country.
Well,
it seems we should.
They're Christians.
Yes, man. The overwhelming majority of terrorist acts, domestic terrorist acts, are committed by white Christian dudes.
Who believe not only in an interesting, shall I say, form of Christianity, but actually believe these weird theories that some place, a pizza parlor or whatever, is the headquarters of where they're doing some kind of nasty sexual stuff.
Yeah, there was that whole thread during the last presidential campaign that Hillary Clinton was operating a child sex slavery ring out of the basement of a pizza parlor.
Yeah.
I mean, this is absurd on its face, right?
Right.
But these things get traction in an environment where there is no effective counter to them. When the guy at the very top encourages it and does nothing to dissuade it.
Well, we also have a lousy educational system.
We do have a lousy educational system.
That's part of it. That's part of the problem.
No, you know what? I'm going to walk that back. I don't think it's as lousy as you believe it is. But it certainly
I've taught in it.
It can certainly be better. Yeah, you've taught in it at the upper levels.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. So all of this is happening at the same time to create this culture of permissiveness that we're talking about. I'll give you another example. The president told the Washington Post earlier this week, quote, he's talking about Congress continuing their investigations of the Russia affair. There's no reason to go any further, and especially in Congress where it's very partisan, obviously very partisan. I don't want people testifying to a party because that is what they're doing if they do this. So right there in the minds of his most ardent supporters, he has conflated Congress the House of Representatives, with the Democratic Party, who were the illegal instigators of this illegal investigation into their president. And anybody who is compelled by these evil Democrats to go before them and testify, it's nothing more than a partisan stunt, because House of Representatives is the Democratic Party.
Yeah, every step of the way, not true.
Every step of the way, not true. But his supporters eat it up. I've got a couple members of my extended family, bless their hearts, who believe all of this stuff.
Really?
All of it.
I don't have that problem. All mine's dead.
Oh, well, that's handy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's go to the phones.
Okay.
Dennis, you're next.
Okay, thank you. I'm going to just say something very obvious and then get off the air. You know, they say that Trump is supported by his base. Now, what we need to do in this, especially in this coming campaign, is to find out, is to address that and find out what his base is, and try to change them. And my understanding is actually that the base is changing, and I've heard that. I don't know if you have, but that's what I've heard. And so let's try to do that, so that we can find out who they are and change them, change their minds.
Okay. Well.
Okay. And just a minute, I'll finish. And
okay.
So that we can get Blondie and people like Blondie and the Stevie Miller out of politics. Thank you very much. That's all I have to say. Take my comments off the air. Thank
sure.
you.
By Blondie, I presume you mean the president himself.
Baldy maybe would be more appropriate, but I don't like Stephen, that kind of physicality attack.
Yep. And then Stephen Miller, his close advisor, who, for all intents and purposes, is formulating domestic policy for this president.
Yeah. No, it's true. I think there's a number of things that need to be understood. First of all, we sort of pretty much, in terms of demographics, understand who his supporters are. And a large part of them are people, working class people, who have not benefited, in fact, have negatively been impacted by the shift of wealth from ordinary people, and it's a shift of just little money, really, from ordinary people to the very, very wealthiest. And the most recent tax change that Trump did is an example of that. And when this happens, and they tell lies about what it's going to do, and then it sort of disappears from the news, but we also notice at the same time that, gee whiz, over the last 10 years, the situation of middle class and working class people is worse, and they're not keeping up with the cost of living. And all of that leads to a great deal of anger. And in this country, particularly in this country, there is no legitimate left-wing argument, I shouldn't say legitimate, no large left-wing argument being allowed by the media, all the media, including the media that abhors Trump, so that we have a vacuum of discourse that is so profound that people are confused and don't know what to believe. And having taught young adults, I have been amazed over the years with the sort of stuff, and I have to say this, that Christian fundamentalism, not all Christian fundamentalism, but a lot of it, teaches about science, i.e. not science.
Mm.
And you know, when you teach lies, when you promulgate lies in one context, it makes it a lot easier to promulgate them in another.
Yeah, you're absolutely right about that. John writes to our Twitter feed, that's HonestAbe72, at HonestAbe72. Let's not forget, John writes, that a Semite is, quote, a member of any of a number of peoples of ancient southwestern Asia, including the Akkadians, Phoenicians, Hebrews, and Arabs. But people have been convinced it only applies to one Abrahamic religion. Yeah, that's technically true, but I think we kind of get into splitting hairs when we make that argument.
Well, and I think there's a lot of historical, I don't know what people know, a lot of historical efforts to demonize the Jewish people.
Right.
I mean, during Passover.
Separate and distinct from the other Semitic peoples.
During Easter and Passover, there was this tradition in Eastern Europe, particularly in Russia, of making pogroms, of attacking villages, raping, killing, destroying stuff, stealing stuff. And this used to happen every single year, led by the young men of the upper class in Russia. And this was a tradition that was so horrible and so awful that it drove people out of Russia and Russian-controlled lands into the United States,
mm-hmm.
up until the Nazis, when we then said there's no room.
Ah, Of course. Yeah, once again, or back then, again, there was no room.
Well, and the fact that the Nazis could grossly turn their attention to anti-Jewish stuff, to anti-Semitism, really, is pretty terrible. But remember, we also have romanticized and stereotyped and negativized other peoples of the Middle East, particularly followers of Islam.
Yeah, indeed we have. That brings to mind, actually, somebody who's been in the press quite a bit of late, and that is the newly elected freshman representative from Minnesota, Ilhan Omar.
Yes.
Who not only is an outspoken woman in a position of power,
right.
God forbid,
yes,
but also wears hijab.
Yes.
So she is the very embodiment of, you know, this existential threat to whiteness that is animating much of Trump's base. I mean, this is, it's really kind of, they're rehashing and repackaging some of the very same arguments and smears that were rolled out against Barack Obama, who himself was the walking embodiment of the existential threat to whiteness. She makes these people's heads explode. The same with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Now, you mentioned a little while ago that amongst the large, you know, collection of peoples that are being demonized by this, you know, this revanchist piece of the right-wing electorate, are people who espouse democratic socialist values. People like Bernie Sanders, like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and like Ilhan Omar.
Yeah.
So if I was one of these people, you know, who frankly I think are bravely carrying this populist economic message forward, I might be looking over my shoulder.
Don't even go there.
No, I think it's true, man.
No, I don't, I'm not saying it's not true. I mean, don't go there.
These are smart people, and I'm sure it has crossed their minds that they might be in danger from these people.
Well, I'm sure there's some degree of truth. How much, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either.
It's scary.
It is. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. This is KBOO 90.7 FM, the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show.
It is.
Joe?
I'm Joe.
I'm Abe?
I'm sure I'm Joe.
I don't know. Coming up this morning on KBOO at 9, alternative radio award-winning playwright and noted stage and screen actor Wallace Shawn talks about
Wallace Shawn,
artists,
one of my favorite
social
actors.
Responsibility. Yeah. Great character actor, been around forever.
Oh, great. He went to school at Dalton School in New York with my cousin.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Never go up against a Sicilian when death is on the line. And at 10, it's Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. It gives an update on Mumia Abu-Jamal. Also, our latest episode of the Election Crimes Bulletin with Greg Palast.
At 11, I like Greg Palast.
I do, too. He's been a guest on this program more than once.
Well, yeah, he's kind of an interesting guy.
He is.
He has a hat. He always wears a hat.
He does. Yeah.
I think he's bald.
Kind of like an old gumshoe. At 11 on stage and studio, host D. May Roberts talks with two directors opening plays soon. We'll hear from Rebecca Martinez, who's directing Wolf at the Door at Milagro Theater, and Lava Alapai, director of The Revolutionists at Artists Repertory Theater. At 11:30 on Art Focus, host Joseph Gallivan interviews Grace Cook Anderson, curator of... It might be Cook, but it's K-O-O-K, which looks like Cook to me. Grace Cook Anderson, curator of Northwest...
I think it's Cook.
Okay. Curator of Northwest Art at the Portland Art Museum about the map is not the territory. All this and more coming up today on KBOO.
Yeah, and you know, we read this stuff because we think you would benefit by going to these things.
Or, you know, or listening to them.
Or doing whatever.
In your office or your home or wherever.
Wherever.
Your car.
And it's really part of the context of the struggle to inform people that this station engages in, which reminds me to remind you to give us a bunch of money. Anyway, let's go to the phones, 231-8187. Brian, you're on the air.
Oh, good morning, you guys. I had a question mainly for you, or maybe you guys can expound on the kind of conundrum about the anti-Semitic bent of a lot of Trump's base. At the same time, he really supports AIPAC, so we got kind of the
paradox.
Side,
paradox.
And we've also got the anti-Jewish side, and somehow Trump is sort of riding that fine line. So he's supporting these racists that are against Jewish people. At the same time, if you bring up Palestine or AIPAC, then you're anti-Semitic. So it's very confusing how to deal with this. Could you expound
well,
on that at all?
I'm going to try. This is a complex set of problems, and it has a historical meaning. At the end of World War II, a movement which had existed as largely a minority movement politically among Jewish people, which was Zionism, became a majority opinion. The slaughter of the Jewish people by the Nazis convinced very, 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 very many people in this country and elsewhere that the Jewish people would never be safe until they had a homeland. Then began a campaign to reclaim what are called the Holy Lands by Christians, which is Palestine, with the argument that Palestine was a land without people for a people, that is the Jewish people, without a land. And this was a propaganda that I saw as a child in the San Fernando Valley. I saw it a lot of places. It was a lie. Fundamentally
right.
alive.
Palestine was never a land without a people.
It was never a land without a people, and the people who were there found themselves without a homeland as a courageous and powerful army, supported in large part by the Western powers, took over that land and created Israel. Now, Israel in its early stages was an interesting place, despite this horror of getting rid of the Palestinian people and kicking them out. It was, in fact, a progressive culture. The kibbutzes were a very interesting experiment in cooperative living. A lot of interesting things were happening, and it was very exciting. But that evolved very quickly under the pressure of the Arab states and others, by the way, including Saudi Arabia, to destroy that state. And eventually, that hardened a lot of opinion, and it certainly created a situation where the large number of American Jews were torn between their belief about this need for a national homeland and the reality of the situation of the people who were being destroyed by the creation of that homeland. That's never been resolved, and it continues to this day. Meanwhile, one of the tactics of the Israeli state was to put its secret service agencies in a situation where they would kill the most rational and the most politically aware of their leadership, of the leadership of the Palestinians outside of Israel, and thereby creating more and more of a hopelessness on the part of the Palestinian people as the Jewish state was more and more successful in isolating and smashing the Palestinians. So there's a contradiction here that is historically amazing and very sad, the contradiction being the situation of the Palestinian people and the situation of the Jewish people prior to the creation of Israel. That's kind of short shifting, but
well, I thought that was pretty good, man.
Yeah, that kind of explains the dilemma. And remember that there was a tradition within the Jewish intellectual community and within the Jewish working class to support social democracy and even more radical left-wing thought. But that runs head-on into what has happened to Israel, which has become a state with an outwardly conservative approach to everything, including religion.
Hmm.
Anyway.
Hmm. Yeah, I thought that was well said.
Oh, thank you.
All right.
That's why they pay me the little bucks.
Indeed. Let's go back to the phones. Francis, you're next.
Hi.
Hi. Good morning.
And if we go to the here and now, what is happening to the Palestinian people is a violation of every human rights law on record, as far as I'm concerned.
It's apartheid. It's apartheid is what it is.
Right. And we need to interject in there the need for short-term profits by warmongers, the corporations that perpetrate war and conflict, because that profit margin there is very influential in what's going on anywhere in any conflict in this world right now, including Venezuela and anywhere else. I would like to go back to our government right now, and the fact that the Attorney General now is pretty much acting as the attorney for the POTUS, and Representative Barbara Lee just called for his resignation. I'm really most concerned about the Congress right now and how they're allowing all of this to continue. And when the Senate Majority Leader pretty much made a vow that any of the New Deal, the Green New Deal types of legislation, he will not allow, he will block.
Right. Well, I like to think of him as the turtle.
Yeah, well, he is, but he's more than that. He's very dangerous. And for the current president to call Robert E. Lee a great general, to actually be able to say that, who was the leader of the army that was trying to fight our government, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
And this is the president of the United States making that statement and trying to justify those people's actions in Charlottesville because they were upset about the removal of the statue of Robert E. Lee. That's how he twists the truth around.
Well,
and that our Congress is allowing this man to continue to be there is the most alarming thing to me that there is. Because of everything that he's done and said and promoted and perpetrated, and they just sit there and allow him to be there, and the media represents it as the Democrats are upset. The Congress should be upset. Instead of calling it the Democrats, they should continue to refer to the leaders of our Congress as the leaders of our Congress and not the Democrats.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that.
All right.
Well,
and one thing I wanted to say,
okay.
I'm reading a book right now. I'll shut up. It's called Solitary. And it was written by Albert Woodfox, who spent 40 years in solitary confinement in Angola prison.
Uh-huh.
And the compassion and the awareness and the fact that this is allowed to continue right now in this country is pretty powerful.
Well, you're right.
As we condemn the POTUS, we have people living in what we fear is going to happen. We have people in this country right now that we profess to be the land of the free, living in solitary confinement where they should not even be. And I don't know what you call that. What would you call that? I don't know. But it's pretty crazy to me.
Cruel and unusual, yes, comes to mind.
Unfortunately, cruel and unusual.
Yeah, but then we profess, we're alarmed at what this man is saying, but no one's alarmed at what is already going on.
I think there's a lot of misinformation and non-information and incredible ignorance in our culture. Sometimes I find myself being very angry at our public educational system because it has always represented the United States as an idealization of democracy wherein everything that happens is for the good of the nation and the people of the nation. I think that lack of critical thinking in the presentation of our own history is a factor, not the significant factor, but a factor in the kind of ignorance we run into. And it makes me very sad.
When people such as Albert Woodfox, who's written something pretty powerful right here, are dismissed and presented as criminals, and we allow that to continue, then I don't know how we ever expect anything to be any different. And that's not the president and the hate mongers who are doing that. That's us. Who are silent when this stuff continues?
Well, I think to a large extent you're right. I don't think you want to dismiss the crimes that brought people into the prison system and the fact that they reformed,
and the fact that they reformed
themselves, which is important.
That never is. But there are people who are there now who shouldn't even be there.
That's true.
A whole lot of people. And it's the same way as when Trump calls the immigrants, rapists, and whatever else.
Uh-huh.
We do that to people in prison right now in our own country.
That is true. Francis, I'm going to give some other people an opportunity. Are you
right,
okay
you
with
guys
that?
Take care.
Okay.
Yeah, you
too.
Thank you, Francis.
Goodbye.
Robbie is next. Good morning.
Yeah, I just wanted to talk briefly about how it's a really weird thing, this Israel debate, because I find that a certain side will always say it's anti-Semitic, but in reality, I just kind of consider myself critical of the Israeli government or the Israeli regime. I guess what I wanted to bring up was Zionism and how there's atheist Zionists, which doesn't quite make sense to me. I don't know if you're aware, but the Zionists actually made a deal with Hitler back before World War II and basically created the Palestinian conflict as we know it through that deal.
I don't know about that. I'm not sure that's correct.
You know, and I'm skeptical, frankly,
That is a fact. No, that is a fact. Okay. If you look it up, the Zionists had made a deal with the Nazis. They paid them money, and then they were basically funneling Jewish people out of the Nazi Germany before the ghettos got too bad. Now, this is all fact, but it's like a really weird thing, because when I bring this up, there's Democrats, you know, or even the activists, they're saying that I'm anti-Semitic, but it's look at what they're doing to Palestine. Anyway, it's a really confusing thing, and I was just wondering. I guess I'd like you to look up the Zionists and Hitler and how close they were.
Well, anyway, I will do this because I'm a little concerned with what you're saying. I will go ahead and do a little research on what you're saying. I don't believe. Let me finish. I don't believe there was a significant agreement in any sense between any leadership of the Jewish people in Central Europe and the plans for the creation of Israel.
It was a financial agreement, and I won't. Well, I mean, that's what you think, but I know this, and you should look it up, and then we can talk about it with what the facts are. But anyway, the thing is it was a financial agreement, and they were able to do that. But it's the overall what I'm finding here, and like here's the factual side, like the controversial subject of Zionists making an agreement with Hitler, the Nazi regime, is that it was them trying to save Jewish people. What the conspiracy, the controversial part is, were the Zionists working with them? That's where I'm not suggesting one way or the other, but the fact of the matter is that Zionists paid the Nazi regime money to basically get Jewish people out of the Nazi Jewish state. Anyway,
let me be clear on one part that I do know. There was a period of time, and it was relatively short, when money could buy freedom for Jewish people. It was very short, and it was not a lot of people. And that may be the root of that accusation. I don't know. I'll do a little research and get back to people on this, but it doesn't sound right to me. Anyway, I want to thank you.
I want to, before we go back to the phones, just take a moment to talk about how the language of the president himself fosters this climate of permissive hate and violence that we've been talking about all
so
long. Sure,
go for it.
This is a couple of things that he tweeted last week. First, Mexico soldiers recently pulled guns on our National Guard soldiers, probably as a diversionary tactic for drug smugglers on the border.
Whoa, he really said that?
I'm not even done with the tweet yet.
Oh.
But yes, let's pause for a moment. Think about what a breathtaking statement that is. The president of the United States accused in public members of the Mexican military of creating an armed diversion to benefit drug smugglers.
Ta-da.
It staggers the mind. I'm trying to imagine some other president saying something like this and trying to imagine the outcry and the backlash that he or she would, well, only he at this point, would have faced. It's astonishing. The rest of that tweet reads, "Better not happen again. We are now sending armed soldiers," in all caps, "to the border." We've been doing that for some time.
Right.
Okay. He says, "We're now doing it. Mexico is not doing nearly enough in apprehending and returning." I mean, this, as I said, this is absolutely breathtaking. And there's virtually no pushback against this.
Well, and it's a misunderstanding of the right of Mexico to do what it wishes to do with the problem of people moving from Central America into Mexico.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just it's the attitude of Trump is that that Mexico should be our servant.
You know, a person in a position of high authority, it's incumbent upon them to use measured language, especially when talking about particularly or potentially inflammatory events.
Well,
but no, he just came out in public and accused the Mexican military of creating an armed diversion for drug smugglers.
Well, just remember, 10,000 and counting lies.
10,000 and counting lies. Now, it turns out that incident actually happened. It turns out it was simply a mix-up about where exactly the border was.
Ah.
Mexican soldiers thought some American soldiers had wandered over armed to their side of the border, when in fact, no, they were still in the United States. It was quickly cleared up. No gunfire was exchanged, and nothing happened. Back to normal.
Right.
Or the new normal, anyway.
Yeah.
But here's the president making outlandish claims about a country he believes is inferior, and about a people he believes are inferior.
Well, you know how to tell when Trump is lying, don't you?
Yes.
When he says anything.
He's tweeting. Yeah. Yes. All right, let's go to the phones. Lou is next.
Good morning.
Morning.
In the area of critical thinking versus ignorance, I was going to mention a couple things that are local that are coming up. They involve speakers at Portland State, and a couple of them are teachers and lawyers. So, Joe, feel free to, you know, interject if you think that public education is, like, really bad since you used to be a Portland State teacher. There's one.
Wait. I don't cop to that. Go ahead. Anyway, go ahead.
That's why I asked if you wanted to interrupt. There's one on Saturday at Portland State. It's kind of on your topic. It's Stop White Power Violence. It's a community forum. Uh-huh. And Randy Blazek, you may know, is one of
them. Oh, I know him well, yes.
Along with Jason Dean, who's called a former. You probably know about that as a term. He used to belong to a hate group, but now he organizes.
I don't know him or of him. I don't.
Right, but the title of his role is called a former with a capital F, like an ex person from that. And there's also one, so that's at PSU. It's at 4 p.m. on Saturday, this Saturday, at PSU Chit Chat Cafe, which is 1907 Southwest 6th. It's on Green Max. There's also one on Wednesday, May 8th, at night at 6 p.m., same location, Chit Chat Cafe. That one's called Social Justice and the Law. And I don't know if you've interviewed the Attorney General, Ellen Rosenblum. She's the main speaker for that one. But Casey Jama with Unite Oregon is also going to talk at that one as well. And I also should mention that the one on Saturday has Senator Lou Frederick. He's a state senator who has an anti-hate a bill in Salem. So those are a couple of upcoming forums. Great Panthers is the sponsor of that. And hopefully, at least locally, in addition to KBOO, that's one way to try to
have some more
critical thinking, not just ignorant propaganda.
Without having heard exactly what is being said at those forums, the people you've mentioned, several of them I know, and I have a great respect for them. Sometimes I disagree with them, but generally I have great respect for them.
Sure. Well, y'all are welcome to come as well. I went to a thing yesterday at the Unitarian Church with the person that I think Joe often mentions, Daniel Outlaw, spoke at the Unitarian Church last night to about 50 people. I thought she was a pretty good speaker, and there were some students from St. Mary's in Lincoln who were also there who asked some good questions, I thought. I guess on the critical thinking front, here's an ethical question, and I'll let y'all go. There's a local activist you may have run into, Tim Calvert, in the past. He used to be a Laughing Horse Books person. And,
yeah.
Okay, so Tim kind of got criticized quite a bit. I saw him recently after a hiatus of 5 or 10 years for really, really liking Palestine, but also allegedly doing Holocaust denial. That there, what Tim used to tell us at Laughing Horse was there are many uses for Zyklon gas. So my ethical question is, if someone in the past, you know, given that we have like a former speaker, someone who was with a hate group before, comes to a left organization meeting, it wasn't our meeting, should people be gentle in asking, well, did you change your mind, or do you still think that's true, or should that be something that someone should be excluded from the group for doing that?
Well, I don't know about it. I don't know about.
But I'll let you go and listen.
Okay, fine. I don't know about exclusion. I think confronting lies, confronting distortions, and confronting bias is perfectly appropriate in the situation that you're talking about. But as to barring it, you move into a dangerous area where censorship takes place and where the breeding ground for hate can happen. And that's just my comment on that. Let's go back to the phones.
Arthur, good morning.
Arthur?
Hi there.
Hey.
Hi there, Joe. Hi, Abe.
Hi there.
I couldn't do what you guys do on a weekly basis. I'm glad when both of you show up, you get two different angles. I'm glad for that. Appreciate it. I had the thing, you're introducing religion into the conversation, and the King James translates the commandment not to bear false witness, which is broader.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still there.
Yep.
So technically, you can deceive others without lying, right? So that's a broader interpretation. Not lie, but deceive. And then there's unknowingly misleading another. Unknowingly. Like you think something that's true, someone deceived you to believe it, you misled it. So that's bearing false witness, too.
Yeah, right.
I didn't realize that people split hairs about the commandments. But go ahead, please.
Well, that's how we are misled by our media, I believe. In that way, and our honest citizens, being misled about silly stuff like self-driving car. Oh yeah, that'll fix stuff. Misled. And even high-speed rail, that we're misled on that. We could do plenty with our standard we got here, the Cascades. Beautiful train. Best in the country. Okay, guys.
Well, thank you for the call.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
I'm not quite following.
I think he was trying to make a larger point about how the rhetoric we hear employed by the ruling class, for lack of a better term, inhibits these actions that we might take to make life better for everybody. So we're constantly told that high-speed rail isn't viable. Oh, it's too expensive. Nobody will ride it.
Despite the fact that it's successfully used throughout the world.
Right, exactly. Transitioning away from fossil fuels is just too difficult. Americans love their pickup trucks. They'll never go for it. And he's right. I guess if you wanted to take a biblical interpretation of that, it's bearing false witness.
Well, sure. I also think that there's a terrible bias against working class culture that is manifest among both the intelligentsia and the upper middle classes and the upper classes.
You know where it's been on full display recently?
Where?
Is a lot of the criticisms of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
Exactly.
It's from the right. People are saying, why do people listen to this? She was a bartender. Why should we care what she has to say? Well, she's a working class person who was elected to Congress. Frankly, we need a lot more of those, not a lot less of them.
She's also well-educated and
very well-educated.
Very smart.
Very smart. And you know what she has done? She has mastered all of these media platforms that you're afraid to even get near, Joe. Things like Twitter, things like Instagram, Facebook. She routinely posts videos of herself asking questions in committee hearings.
Right.
And it's brilliant.
Well, I think she's very cool.
Yep. She has another series of videos on Instagram where she explains in layman's terms how the various processes work, how bills move through committee and so on. It's really great, informative stuff.
Yeah.
Stuff that we need a whole lot more of to make the process of government more transparent. But no, why should we listen to her? She's just a bartender.
Yeah, she's just a bartender.
Yeah, indeed. Let's go to Randy. Good morning.
Hi. Yeah. I want to bring out a few historical points on, you know, we were talking about the Trump religious right. And one thing about when you start talking about the religious right in the U.S. being anti-Semitic, up until like the 1930s, the ultra-conservative Christians in the U.S. were largely apolitical. And there was an active movement to politicize them, of which one of the contributors was actually the Nazi Party. And one evidence of that is the convictions for espionage related to ministers of the Church of the Nazarene. I mean, and there were like the things like papers floating around essentially saying that National Socialism will never work in the U.S. We can't organize along these lines. We have to do it along religious lines in the U.S. And it's not clear how important their input was, but there was certainly something there. And the thing is...
Well, I have to say I know nothing about that, but go ahead.
Okay. Well, then the thing is, after World War II, the Christian religious right emerged. And you can verify what I'm saying. Just look up Church of the Nazarene convictions, espionage, World War II. I mean, I'm not making it up.
No, I'm not accusing you of that. I just say I don't know anything about it.
But then what happens is after World War II, this group gets recruited and they become almost slavishly pro-Israel. Okay, and now the thing is that one of the elements of the religious right, and again you can verify this, you have elements of, actually the racist right in this case, people like Jared Taylor, you know, actively saying, well, gee, we have to get rid of this heritage of anti-Semitism. We should be recruiting Jews for white nationalism, you know, because they're white too, and that's a huge shift in that movement, and I think it's something that's dividing that movement at this point, and it's a debate that they are in the middle of having among themselves. But that's something that's going on there, and I think that one of the reasons why we have Trump around is that he's a guy with Jewish grandkids who is, you know, less threatening to certain interests than some of the other.
Well, I do have an opinion about that. I don't think Trump cares about anyone other than himself, and I don't think he has a tactical consideration around Jared Kushner.
He cares about Putin.
Yeah, he likes Putin.
Yeah.
They may have a strange relationship.
Oh, there's nothing strange about it.
Okay. Let's go to the phones, 231-8187. Corey, you're next.
Good morning.
Hey, good morning. Good morning, guys. We always kind of end up going back to education, so currently I'm teaching, working on my PhD, and a guy came to my house. I'm in Houston, Texas. He came to work on a window, and he drove up in his pickup truck. I'm in Houston, Texas, and he had an InfoWars bumper sticker on the back of his truck. And I kind of looked at him and said, you're an Alex Jones fan. He's like, yeah, he's the only guy that tells the truth around here. I'm like, all right, well, you can, you know, get off my property. And he sort of looked at me funny, like, I'm a large black man. I don't want you on my property. I don't, you know, you can take off. But lo and behold, we talk about education. I go to the gym this morning, and, you know, there's the bikes with the TVs, and they're about four or five older gentlemen. I would say in their late 50s, early 60s, and they're all watching public access. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, something is going on to where, you know, we could say this is the young people, but there's a lot of older white men that are really into this sort of alternative reality where, you know, Alex Jones and other mm-hmm. people have, like, really dominated their mindset where, you know, these guys are telling the truth out here. You know, we don't like the government unless it's Trump, but these guys are the truth tellers. The Alex Jones, the Sandy Hook wasn't real. And I think there's something a bit sinister going on right now to where this is, you know, not just being accepted, but being accepted, like, just out openly. Yeah, I'm a huge Alex Jones fan. Sandy Hook was wrong. I'm going to put a bumper sticker, go work on your house, and then, you know, you look at me like you're the stupid one. And that's the thing. These people are like, we're the dumb ones to them. We're the, you know, we're educated, we work hard, but yet we're the dumb ones, the ones that listen to Alex Jones. We're the educated ones. We're the smart guys. And it is just, I see it a lot in Texas. I was seeing a little bit more when I left Portland, but I see it a lot here, and it's a bit disheartening, but it's almost like, wow, you know, what's really going on with our education system?
Well,
I'm sorry.
No, I think you're making a good point. I think there is a tremendous, a tremendous movement toward a kind of alternative reality out of the right. And that movement has gotten legs.
Yeah. Fake news.
Fake news.
Yeah. Well, when all of your discourse, when all of your thinking takes place in an echo chamber, when everything you say and hear is reinforced by other people saying and hearing the same things, you can literally create a framework for reality that differs significantly from the actual reality that we all live in. And we see it over and over and over again. I just look at some of the things that hardcore conservatives believe. It boggles the mind.
Have you an example or two?
An example or two?
Or three or 17?
Yes, that Jews and non-white peoples are trying, actively conspiring and working hard to replace white people.
Right. And at the same time, the state of Israel is necessarily the place where all Jews will go before the end of time.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the same people frequently believe both those things.
Yeah, it's true.
Weird.
Yeah, it really is weird. Corey, thank you for the call. It means a lot that you continue to tune in and offer your feedback, even from Texas. So thank you for that.
Yeah, really. I think that we are a culture right now in a kind of crisis of ignorance at so many levels, with alternative notions of reality that have legs, that mm-hmm. actually influence political decisions, influence moral behavior, influence almost everything. When Trump can say, and this is where we started, that people are killing babies killing babies by a decision of a mother and a doctor, and people go, oh, yeah, that's true, we are in serious, serious jeopardy of losing all sense of reality. And this is what he's feeding is raw meat to a crowd of neo-crazies. I hate to say that, but you can get 20,000 people in a room who will believe insane things.
It's true. Literally insane things.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like President Obama was born in Kenya and secretly smuggled into the United States as a baby so that he could one day be president.
Yeah, clever, clever, clever.
That Hillary Clinton ran a child sex slavery ring out of a pizza joint.
Isn't that true?
It's completely true. Yeah. Alex Jones told me.
Yeah, Alex Jones. There's a guy who knows the truth. Okay, listen, y'all stay tuned to KBOO. It's the best in opinion and news, and maybe more important to life, the best in music. So give us money and give us your ear.
Yeah, music is more important than news. I'm glad we got that on the record. Thank you for tuning in. We'll be back at you next week.
Sirens, night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay. Democracy is coming to the USA.
May is Asian and Pacific Islander American Heritage Month. So to recognize our Asian and Pacific Islander American identified community, Cable will be airing all Asian and Pacific Islander programming from 8 a.m. until 4 p.m. on Friday, May 3rd. That day, we'll be airing features from your favorite API KBOO programmers. Tune in to hear episodes of Lip Fantastic, APA Compass, DMA Roberts' award-winning series, Crossing East, and an all-new Pacific Underground and music playlist by Sun Lee and DJ Diablo. That's Asian and Pacific Islander American Heritage Day, Friday, May 3rd, from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m., only on your community radio station, KBOO Portland. For more information and program schedule, just go to our website at kboo.fm.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. The time now is 9 o'clock. Coming up next on Alternative Radio, award-winning playwright and noted stage and screen actor Wallace Shawn talks about artists and social responsibility. At 10, it's Flashpoints, and Dennis Bernstein gives an update on Mumia Abu-Jamal and also his latest episode of the Election Crimes Bulletin with Greg Palast. At 11, stage and studio host Emay Roberts talks with two directors opening plays soon. We'll hear from Rebecca Martinez, who's directing Wolf at the Door at the Milagro Theater, and Lava Alapai, director of The Revolutionists at Artist Repertory Theater. And at 11 on Art Focus, host Joseph Gallivan interviews Grace Cook Anderson, curator of Northwest Art at the Portland Art Museum, about The Map Is Not the Territory. All of these KBOO programs are made possible by member support. If you'd like to become a member, go to kboo.fm or use our mobile app and click on Donate.
KBOO is proud to co-sponsor Village Market's 8th Birthday Block Party Celebration on May 4th from noon to 3 at Village Market on North Trenton Street across from McCoy Park. Village Market is a nonprofit of Village Gardens working alongside North Portland community members to build food resiliency through youth leadership, community farming, and good food access. The Village Market Birthday Block Party will include face painting and screen printing,